Warning, the following episode of That Mental Ginger Show contains strong language and adult themes.
All right, troops.
This episode of That Mental Ginger Show is recorded at Scuff Studios in Swanston Street, Glasgow. If you're looking to do podcasts, music, or any creative passions, these guys will have you covered. For more information, contact Scuff Studios at scuffed.studios.gla@gmail.com or find them on Facebook or Instagram and drop them a message. Scuff Studios, to nurture your creative passions. Hello and welcome to That Mental Ginger Show with your host Andrew Durning, aka The Mental Ginger. Now, my three faithful followers, I don't actually feel like I can just say The Mental Ginger because we have two Mental Gingers today. This must be the sign of the apocalypse, two gingers in a studio. What could possibly go wrong? Well, we're about to find out because he's also a very well-respected stand-up comedian, Chris. Thank you so much. Give us your full name, your full introduction, so we can all embrace the gingerness.
Well, thank you for having me, Andrew. So my name's Christopher John Stephen, and one half of Ginger Ale Comedy, which is a sort of not-for-profit performing arts group that I set up, but I'll go and talk about that in a bit. And I did my best to look like you looking through a warped evil mirror.
Well, in fairness, like, I look like I was dragged through a hedge backwards. That's what happens when you're married and have kids. So the first thing I like to do with all my guests is to get them to tell us about their origin story, because if there's one thing we all have in common, we all have an origins. So, Christopher John Stephen, in your own time, please tell our three faithful followers your origin story.
Oh, well, difficult to sort of narrow it down as to how I end up doing stand-up comedy.
We'll start with the basics. Where were you born?
Okay, so I'm from Aberdeen originally, and sort of grew up in the the bit where it just about becomes Aberdeenshire, which is quite nice, but it's still Aberdeen. So I suppose I started doing like performing there because I got like sort of bit parts and like the sort of local pantomimes when I was a kid. So
nice. How old were you when you started doing the pantomimes?
Oh gosh, I must have been about 10 or 11. Got the very coveted role of the Lord High Executioner in Aladdin, which nobody remembers is in Aladdin.
In fairness, that's Disney's fault.
Well, that's true, yeah. I mean, that's Hollywood for you.
Yeah, that's another story for another day. That's why I'm still underground. No one's going to look for that.
I was always very interested in like this sort of stand-up comedy. I had loads of VHSs of folk like Lee Evans, Jasper Carrot. Bob Monkhouse has always been one of my sort of comedy icons, because people always ask you who's your favourite stand-up comedian.
Literally just stole my question.
So
it was Bob Monkhouse.
Definitely.
What did you find that gravitated you to him? Because it's quite an interesting choice. People normally will go Billy Connolly which in fairness is good, but that's the thing.
Everybody always thinks Bob Monkhouse was the guy who did all the game shows, and fair enough, he did a lot of game shows, but the main reason he got those gigs was he was lightning fast with regards to sort of how he interacted with people. You know, he always came up with sort of stuff on the spot.
He was really good with his one-liners as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, one-liners were absolutely fantastic, and you could tell like just sort of it just sort of came naturally to him like that. It was that just one of these people was built for comedy, and like it was very difficult to actually you can still sort of get on like DVDs the actual stand-up tours where he's actually done proper comedy gigs, and always urge people to look at that because it's just amazing seeing him doing it actually stand-up as an art. You see just how all the game shows and everything he'd done after that just gravitated from that, the fact that he was just a fantastic, fantastic performer.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the sort of origins, I thought, right... After all my panto training, I thought, I'll give it a go. So when I went to university, I can honestly say my first gig didn't go that well because I didn't really respect what it meant, what an open mic night actually was.
So what university did you go to?
I went to the University of Edinburgh.
Oh, nice. Was it the actual university, not like Napier or anything like that?
Yeah, the proper one.
Yeah, they knocked me back for a university placement, so fuck you, Edinburgh. Right, so, you know what? Your first gig. Tell me about it, because I've only done two stand-up comedy gigs, and I died a painful death. The only time that I actually got a laugh was because I was actually saying to people, my whole shtick was that I wasn't funny, but I was unintentionally hilarious. So I said, I'm no funny, and a lassie went, I noticed. And I went, Hen, your patter is flatter than your tits.
Oh my God.
What? So nice. Everybody laughed, she was silent, and I was like, that's my one and only time that I silenced a heckler. I'm bowing out. So tell me about your first gig.
Well, okay, I can kind of trump that, because like I say, I saw open mic night and the sort of local student union. I thought, right, I will do my first stand-up comedy gig there. I didn't realise open mic night actually usually meant music. But, you know, they're quite accommodating, and so I generally did my first gig to a lot of very confused people who were expecting a mediocre Supergrass cover and acoustic guitar.
Of all the bands, it had to be Supergrass.
So, start in the deep end, and then anything else after that's got to be a sort of a wish up.
Yeah, it's got to be a bonus from that point. So, what year was that you done your very first open mic?
Technically, yeah, that was probably about 2003. But right. When I got into stand up, legit was when I sort of moved back to Aberdeen. Now, I credit quite a lot of people for that, but the main focus of it was obviously I didn't really know how to get into stand up comedy. There wasn't a big stand-up comedy scene in Aberdeen at the time. This was before the days of what happens now with breakneck comedy and rock opera comedy, and there's actually legit clubs based in Aberdeen for comedy. You didn't have any of that in the sort of 2000s. But what you did have was some very, very good local groups. I remember one group in particular called Comedy Capers, which existed about that time, which was run by a very good woman called Wendy Ivers. Now, what she did was she got people who were interested in stand-up comedy, and she'd had quite a lot of experience sort of going down to Glasgow and Edinburgh doing gigs. So they managed to get sort of local bars and clubs in Aberdeen involved, and actually did routine new act stand-up comedy nights for people who were just starting out and doing their material.
Yeah.
And it was great. I met so many people sort of through that. People like Martin Byrne, who've gone on to done sort of acting and do quite a lot of the sort of local comedy gigs in Scotland. And it was just good to sort of start doing material like that. And that's where I sort of found my forte for actually going on stage and doing that. I mean, fair enough, I still do stand-up comedy as a hobby. And, you know, I've got a full-time job as a software test analyst during the day, but it was nice to just sort of be able to have that as a sort of a second string, and you know, do comedy with people that sort of
Hear about the software analysts. Take a wee detour. So what type of software do you analyze? I mean, is that just basically the raw and seal of titles? It's exactly what it is in the tin, or do you get to test the latest tech and be like, right, this is great, this isn't it?
It's something I sort of came into because I actually got a degree in physics and...
Wow, we've got Sheldon.
gets better. I actually I was a research student at the Centre for European Nuclear Research for 3 months, where that phrase Big Bang Theory actually arises from.
So I've got to really watch what I say now in case you blow me up. never tick off a ginger, that's what happens. Physics of all things, that's fascinating to me. What made you interested in that?
I guess I just always had an aptitude for it. I was always sort of good with sort of numbers and figures, and I was sort of well into science. So I think that's probably why I ended up sort of as a testing things, because I've just been sort of testing stuff and breaking my whole entire life.
I am so envious of you for that, because mathematicians shouldn't be funny. Yeah, you're fucking hilarious.
Oh, thank you.
I've seen some of your stuff. Obviously, I do my general stalking, as I call it, to check out the guests. And you mentioned ginger ale comedy. It's very interesting. I also like it because it's ginger. So tell us about ginger ale comedy.
Right. So while I was still in Aberdeen, I got introduced to two very funny books called Tiffer Robertson and James Payne, who ran a sort of their own comedy company called The Flunge. From that, I met a very, very lovely lady who did the tickets in the door, tickets and door for them, called Debbie Overall, who would later become Debbie Stephen, my wife.
That's absolutely brilliant. Well, and that's something that we look forward to, because I wanted to get Debbie as well, so we could have our very first married stand-up comedy troupe. Well, and you've already told me the origin story now of that. Yep. So she was on the door. You were performing. One thing led to another, and bing. Well,
took a bit more work than that, I have to admit.
Well, that's the hook for the next episode when we get you both back.
Indeed, so we
can find out more about the story. So how did Debbie and yourself form that kind of essentially a married comedy troupe?
Well, she was always interested in performing arts. She sort of did a college course in Kirkcaldy. She got a degree in drama and performing arts from Liverpool Hope University.
Wow.
Well, she was sort of still in her degree course while recording. So when she finished that, we, following on from sort of work I did with Tiffer and James, and when I went to my first Fringe, it was with them, we decided we'd sort of form a sort of group together and then do showcase where we'd be able to go to the Fringe and invite along the people that, we'd known from Aberdeen, we'd known from living in Glasgow, because we'd moved to Glasgow at this point, and just sort of try and do a showcase. So from that, Ginger Ale Comedy was the sort of name we gave to this sort of stream of shows we did at the Fringe, and then we ended up doing the Glasgow Festival. We started doing a sort of big things for charity. Brilliant. And it's all just sort of stemmed from there.
So what work have you done for charity?
When we started doing the Glasgow Comedy Festival, we decided to go in very big. So the first year we did a show called the Round the Clock Comedy Roadshow.
This was an
idea that myself and Debbie had. Rather than do sort of one show in one location and give the money to charity, we decided to do a whole series of shows in different locations dotted around Glasgow.
Yeah.
We were quite ambitious at first, because we ended up doing a 48-hour-long show in 16 different locations.
Whoa. That is go big or go home territory.
Yeah. So basically, sort of all these pubs and clubs and just a couple of other areas dotted around Glasgow, we thought we'd sort of do big. We did the Tall Ship at one point during this show. We did a place that used to be a chocolate, the number one chocolate factory, which used to be we did a little family show in there.
Getting to perform in a chocolate factory, that's like my wet dream.
So we did the sort of lobby of the Euro Hostel, which is quite weird, because it was obviously, because this was a 48-hour show, it was at 10 a.m. in the morning, and we were literally performing to people who are in the bus stop looking slightly confused.
Or slightly drunk.
Yeah, or both.
How much did you raise?
So we did this show sort of five or six times over the past years, right up until the sort of Glasgow Comedy Festival stopped being a thing because of COVID, and we probably raised over and above the £10,000 mark for sort of local charities.
Wow.
So a lot of that went to sort of Macmillan Cancer Trust, Cancer Research UK. Cancer's a big thing for us, because obviously both of us have had people in their sort of families who've fallen victim to cancer. It's a big thing for both of us, so it's a charity we'd quite like to support.
No, definitely. And that's amazing raising that much money. Congratulations. That is absolutely brilliant. I'm really blown away by that. Because normally when somebody tries to take on a big project like that, there's every likelihood it could fall on its arse. And being as subtle as a brick to the face that I am, that had the potential to fall on its arse. But not only did it go so well, you raised so much money for a very worthy cause. You got to do it with your wife. Was she your wife at that point?
She was still my girlfriend at that point. We got married. So it just turned her 5-year wedding anniversary.
You've been married about same time as me as well. Two genders that got married in 2013. That is the sign of the apocalypse is definitely coming, my friend. Now I need to double check. Let me see your wedding ring. It looks very similar to mine.
Oh my god!
We are two of the four horsemen right
here.
Yeah. There we go. The ginger horsemen of the apocalypse are coming. The ginger lips, if you will. That's crazy, man. So where did you get married?
I got married back in Aberdeen. It's a place, the Norwood Hall Hotel, which is like, used to be a sort of country estate, but it's sort of been converted for that.
Oh, nice. Did you have like limits for your guests?
No. This was always interesting, because obviously, the thing about getting married is you always have to sort of get all the family there, and then you've got, every sort of married man is sort of going there. Unmarried women, don't be sexist. It's always difficult to get a table planned.
Well, in fairness, there's like 26 genders, so if we were going through that, we'd be stuck here all day. Mm.
But
that's not me being transphobic or anything. That's me encouraging everybody to be anything they want. Boy, girl, toaster, doesn't matter.
Whatever kind of wedding you have as well, whatever you do, whether it's humanist or it's Christian, you will eventually have to look at a table plan and sit scheming for...
My God, I hated the table plan. Hated it. It was a nightmare. Well, and we only had like 50 guests for the day. And that was still oh my God, I don't want to sit that person next to that person. That person might not get on with that person. Oh my God, it was a headache. But here's the question I ask every married man. Did you get a bit of your buffet?
Good question, actually, yeah. No.
Because that's something after I got married, everybody talked about how the buffet was banging. And I never got a bit, because you're wanting to make sure the guests are having a good time, people are coming up to you like buying drinks, and you're talking away to everybody. So the buffet had came and gone, and I hadn't even noticed. So it's the one piece of advice I give to every person that's getting married. I say, make sure that you have someone delegated to bring you a bit of your buffet.
Good point.
And everybody has said, oh, I won't need to worry about that. I'll make sure I'm all right. And then after they get married, I say, did you get your buffet? And they go, no, I didn't think about it. You didn't listen to the key advice, man.
Well, one of the things we did was box clever with that, because obviously you pull every favour in when you get married. And the two key ones were my aunt decided to do the cake for weddings. So we've got all these really just the best red velvet cupcakes we've ever had in our life. And they were so popular. They were so good.
Yeah. But it was Alison's aunt that done our wedding cake as well.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there we are. And it was all down to her specs, so I never got a fucking bit. So yeah.
And the other one was a good friend of ours and fantastic fringe promoter, a guy called Ray Fordyce.
Yeah.
He's based in Edinburgh. His day job is he works at a fudge sort of factory known as the Fudge Kitchen on the Royal Mile.
Oh, nice.
So, God bless the guy, because not only did he manage to get us about 10 pounds of fudge for her favours for her guests, which I had to log back from Edinburgh on a train full of really drunk people from Motherwell to get back to my house. That was a hard memory. But not only did he do that, he was videographer for the entire wedding, and he did it without sort of any sort of that. So, I mean, Ray's been a good friend to both me and Debbie. We're sort of doing stuff online with him since the lockdown. Just sort of can't fault him for that. And did manage to get a bit of fudge, but it was so popular. I noticed a lot of the other. Some of the other comedian guests were literally going around the tables and going, I'll have that fudge and I'll have that fudge.
That's the whole point of comedians.
It's what are you doing? It's a shame for it to go to waste. Won't name any names in particular who actually did that, but it was popular. So.
In fairness, I done that at the end of the night when people were leaving and their drinks were still there. And I'm like, no point in going to waste.
No.
Not back. Well, and it meant it was for free. I was like, I paid for this fucking venue. I'm gonna make sure I drink this dry. So, tell us a bit more about what is to come for Ginger Ale Comedy. What's 2022 got in store for you?
Right, well, obviously, as we know, lockdown's been a big thing, and it's affected the stand-up comedy industry very badly, no question. excuse me.
That's all right.
Excuse me.
Well, he has a bit of time to drink his water. Right, and then that gives him a bit of time to remember what he's actually doing with his comedy.
Worst comes to worst, you can send it until it'll be all right in the night and make a few quid.
Right. That's all right. Well, I keep all this stuff in because I don't like the whole kind of where it's polished, it doesn't seem like anybody makes a mistake. Everybody makes a mistake. Well, I mean, the back of my throat was swelled up so much I thought I'd swallowed a golf ball. I didn't think I was going to be able to speak today. So.
Oh, well. So, yeah, when the lockdown hit, obviously we'd... it was very difficult to sort of do stand-up. There were things online, obviously, you know, having a podcast such as this is great. It's good that sort of keeps your ear in with regards to things like this. And also there's lots of people setting up podcasts. I got quite into Twitch. I just think it was pretty much a gamer community before lockdown, but it has opened up so much. There's been a lot of stand-ups, started doing gigs in there, started doing regular stuff in there.
Ah.
What we did... sort of as Ginger Ale Comedy, but also in conjunction with a couple of good friends of ours, Ewan McPherson and the aforementioned Mr. Fordyce.
Yeah.
We decided to start doing improv workshops.
Ah, nice.
Online. So it's more of a friendly thing. It's like, yeah, you see this sort of improv sessions and things like Whose Line Is It Anyway and like mm-hmm. the stuff you see in Mock the Week. So we decided to sort of do that for ourselves and get people to sort of get along, do a Zoom call every week, and they've become really, really popular. I mean, that's basically what myself and Debbie sort of started doing. We did little sessions like this and sort of comedy get-togethers. So mm-hmm. it was good to revisit that after so many years and just enjoy sort of, you know, getting together, doing a bit of comedy, you know, things like improv games, things that we say that, and just mm-hmm. enjoying sort of making friends through that and sort of doing that. So that's been good. Obviously, now sort of COVID's become less of a thing. Things are starting to open up and it's been good for me to get out and sort of do gigging again. I'm now based in Hamilton.
You're not that far away from me. I'm Coatbridge.
Yep.
The next in Hamilton, but that's another story for another day.
Hamilton... there has a place called The Junkyard, which...
yeah, I've heard of that.
That's... let me get this right. South Lanarkshire's longest-running new act comedy night. So they've been doing that for a good few years. Since I moved to Hamilton, I've obviously become a bit more friendly, but I did the act... I did the...
in fairness, you must be like the only funny person in Hamilton.
Oh, well.
Save from your wife.
No, well, indeed, yeah. Got that. It got me out of jail there. Yeah. Andrew, thank you.
Well, there's two words that got me through every bit of my marriage. Yes, dear.
Ah, fair enough.
That's the advice I'll give you for your marriage as well.
So
2022.
Yes.
You're going to be performing in the Junkyard?
Yeah, doing a gig there sort of quite soon and sort of looking to do more. It's now been taken over by... another good friend of mine, Stephen Youngson, who ran quite a lot of Twitch gigs while we're in lockdown.
Nice.
And he sort of made the transition to doing them in real life, which is really good. He's getting a local lad. He lives up in the Wishaw. Mm. So
it must be weird, though, like if you're going from that to meeting people in real life. It must be like when people play Dungeons & Dragons and
it's weird.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, you actually exist.
It's weird. Did you kind of expect them to have a box around them and their name in the bottom there at all times?
That's what you should do. Like, just cut for a Halloween party, you just come as a Zoom call. Well, you'll just turn up with boxes or a wee name tag. It would probably be the easiest costume you can make.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But like I say, because the online stuff's been so beneficial and it's been good to do that, I really hope it sort of continues into 2022. You know, a lot of people started doing Zoom gigs online. A lot of people started doing these sort of free show channels or ones where you sort of pay mm-hmm. a bit of money for sort of upkeep and then you can sort of watch it streamed. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking to do that. I'm currently co-running a thing called the Friday 6 PM show, which is based on Twitch. It, funnily enough, runs Friday 6 PM British time. Mm-hmm. And we're getting sort of acts from around the globe and a lot of sort of Scottish-based ones to actually do that. And
That's fantastic. Well, it's, you'll need to send me like the information for it when it's coming, and I'll give it as much promotion as I can, because like, that's something that is good for promoting like all the kind of underground acts and try and give them a bit of publicity, which is essentially the same deal as I try to do with this.
Excellent, yeah, yeah.
Well, we are starting to come up on time, so I'll round off with the question that I ask all my guests. If you had one piece of advice to give to someone who is maybe struggling with mental health issues, what would that piece of advice be and why?
Now, yes, it's one of the reasons why I'm really sort of excited about doing this, because, yeah, I have had quite a lot of struggles with mental health over the past few years.
I'm really sorry to hear that.
You know, sometimes, you know, it's been very, very difficult, and it can feel just so hard to open up to people. Mm. And, you know, when you're in a position like that, it sort of can grate in you and it feels bad. So what I'd say is, I think people put a lot of stigma in it, but it's okay to not be okay.
Mm.
You know, one of the sort of hardest things that I face with that is sort of self-questioning and thinking, why do I feel like this? I shouldn't feel like this. This is wrong. This isn't right. I should be trying a bit harder. But, you know, I think people need to be a lot more tuned on about the sort of stigma of mental health and the fact that, you know, all this sort of negative thinking, it is a spiral and it is a downward spiral and it can affect you badly. So, you know, just getting that sort of thought in your head that it's okay for me to feel like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay for me to sort of worry and introspective and not feel good about what things are going. But, you know, try to end a positive note. There is help you can get, you know, counselling services are people plan, but there's so much sort of free counselling, you know, things like Smart and So Good, things like sort of the See Me, I'm a Person, things so good, the charities. And, you know, I'd urge people to sort of seek help and do that, because, you know, there is a light there. Yeah. There are people who care about you and generally want you to do well.
And I seen that was hard for you to say, and I really do appreciate that you were able to feel comfortable to come on here and say that, because that takes a lot of balls. What it really does, and I've got nothing but respect for you for being able to say that. And it's one of the reasons why I've done this as well. So people can have someone to talk to. I may be a bit of a nutter sometimes, but I'm a friendly nutter. And I like to listen, and I like to make sure that people are okay. Well, and I'm really, really glad that you came on today, Christopher. It's been an absolute privilege to speak to you. And like you said, we do like to round off on a positive note.
Yep.
So it's time for Hamilton Aberdeen Glasgow's favourite segment, Ask Andrew Anything. Now, this is where, after me grilling the guest for, how long have we been grilling him, Ross, on video? I've got 26 minutes and 40 seconds. 26 minutes and 40 seconds. Can't get the staff these days, can you?
Mm.
This is where the guest gets to ask me any question at all. It could be something as mundane as, why do you have Ren and Stimpy on your desk? To, who would win the fight between a peacock and a Tyrannosaurus Rex? So, Christopher, do you have a question for me?
Right. Okay, so, like I say, when me and Debbie were doing Ginger Ale comedy regularly at the sort of Fringe and the festival, we did have a little award ceremony at the end of the year, and one of our awards was Best Ginger.
Hey!
Now, have a think of it. Who would be your best ginger for 2021? And I'll say the same thing that Debbie said to me. You can't nominate yourself.
Oh, damn. I mean, that would be my first run, wouldn't it?
No. Believe me, I try.
Believe me, I definitely not. The whole problem with that is there aren't many gingers advertised these days.
Okay.
Well, and if they are advertised, they're usually seen as the biggest dicks on the planet. If you even thinking back to the Bible, Judas Iscariot was ginger. Now, how the fuck you can get that in a Middle Eastern country, I have no idea, but apparently he was ginger. Well, South Park has made it that we don't have souls. Yes, we actually do, or we would take this ship so personally. Well, and probably the only ginger that's actually got any action is Ed Sheeran.
Oh, dear.
He is the only person that I recognise in the ginger community that's actually maybe made an impact. And I'm like, I'm loath to nominate him. But I do sing a lot of his songs because he's very, very quick. So I'll have to say Ed Sheeran for Best Ginger. But it's quite ironic that you brought that up, because my college course had, on their very last day, they had these weekend of nomination things, and it was Best Ginger.
Okay.
Now, the nominees were myself, Another guy in the HND first year class, but I disqualified him because he said he was strawberry blonde. just accept your ginger and fucking man up, mate.
Not having that.
And then the lecturer who was ginger. And the lecturer won.
Oh, dear.
Now, that's fucking shite. Graeme Carr, you're a knob. What? Nothing against you, Graeme. I actually do really love you. I think you're brilliant. But yeah, it was such a fix. And I was raging because everybody wanted me to do it. And it was mainly because, at that point, that was when I'd had my bad mental health and I tried to kill myself and I'd managed to kind of claw my way back and finish the course. So they were all rooting for me for that point. And then when they said it was Graeme, we were all like, dick. But we'll round off now with that very, very pleasant note of calling my old college lecturer a wanker. Well, Christopher, thank you so much for coming on. It's been absolutely brilliant to talk to you. And just even getting to share part of your story takes a lot of courage. And I really respect you for doing it. And I hope you come back with your wife and we can have a wee kind of a married session.
I love that. Fantastic.
I'll try and maybe convince the wife to come, but I doubt she will because, let's face it, she's not here anyway. So until next time, my three faithful followers, I have been Andrew Dernan. This has been the amazing Christopher John Stephen. So until next time, take care. Stay safe. Bye-bye.